Mountbatten Hospice Show with James and Judith. Community radio at its best.
Time for another hospice show. We can't even call it the Earl Mountbatten Hospice Show now. It's the Mountbatten Hospice Show. We're going to have to do something about the jingles, but that will happen over the next few weeks. In the studio with us, though, we've got Donna Jones, MBE, and Joan Ellis, some of our favourite guests. They are fun. They're fabulous. They are female. They put the litter into alliterative because most of their shows are alliterative. And in fact, I think your next show, which is going to be at the hospice, is indeed alliterative, isn't it? What's it called?
Well, it hasn't actually got a name.
I thought it was Love, Life and Laughter.
Well, it can be. It can be whatever you want it to be. That's what people will feel and that's what people are going to get when they come.
Well, that's great. It's a show that's going to be next Thursday, and that is Thursday the 19th of April in the wonderful John Cheverton Centre. And tell us what we can expect.
You can expect anecdotes. You can expect racy stories, poetry, beautiful readings. Donna and I like kind of Anton Deck, the menopausal Anton Deck, granted.
Exactly.
Anton Deck nonetheless.
And which is Anton, which is Deck? Nobody ever knows,
that's
do
right,
they?
That's right, so it doesn't matter.
I try and remember. I think it is either the tall one, the small one, and I completely lose it. So,
yeah, exactly.
Well, we're the ones that turn up. We'll be there, so, you know, I know one's missing at the moment, so we're the one that obviously is going to be there.
Fabulous. Well, look, we're going to hear more about that later in the show, but first of all, Joan, I was just listening to the story that you told here on Vectis Radio, very sort of sad, poignant story about your mother, who sadly died from dementia earlier this year. Could you just tell us a little bit more about what happened? Because it was a sort of tragic tale, really, of a wonderful lady whose life just sort of faded away over 5 years.
Yes, it was. I mean, Dementia Stole My Mum was the title of the show that I did for Vectis, and that seemed to sum it up for me, because that's what it felt like, that I was being robbed of my mother very early on, always like she was disappearing down a dark sort of alley, and I was calling her, and sometimes she'd look back over her shoulder, but she'd just keep walking away from me, but she was still there.
Yeah.
But every time I saw her, something else had gone. She'd lost some other sort of faculty.
Yeah.
And whether it was to remember how to make a cup of tea, or to remember to eat the food I brought for her, it was just shocking, because I thought, you can't take any more of this woman's essence away. But it did.
No,
and it felt like a sort of grim reaper.
No, I know.
Coming early.
And from listening to your show, it's heartbreaking that, you know, you don't think it can get any worse, and then it does get worse. I mean, dementia is such a horrible thing for people who haven't sort of suffered from it personally. To go through that must be absolutely agonizing.
It is, and I think everybody, it's like any of those illnesses, everybody's experience of it is very different.
Yeah.
And my mother lost the ability to speak.
So I know, that must
was
be
horrific.
Absolutely horrific.
And, she was losing words, she couldn't remember names, she couldn't remember my daughter's name, so her granddaughter's name she couldn't remember, which was obviously heartbreaking for Sophie. I think she knew who we were right up until the end, and because Mum was very lucky, she wasn't lucky, she wasn't a fortunate person, sadly.
Yeah.
She always battled through life, but right at the end, and I really wish and I hope Mum was aware that right at the end she lucked out. She just got kind of taken on these wonderful wings and transported into the hospice here on the Isle of Wight. And Nigel Hartley was very supportive, as was Jill George, the Admiral nurse that's funded there.
Yeah.
And she just had the most dignified, beautiful end to her life, if that's possible.
Well, that's good to know. Well, let's hear more about, you know, what the hospice does for people with dementia, and also, you know, although sad as it is, you know, perhaps more about what the hospice can do in terms of the last few days of a person's life in a moment. You're listening to the Hospice Show here on Vectis Radio. We've got Joan and Donna in the studio with us, and Joan, you were just talking about your mother and her sad loss to dementia, but there is some good news in all of this, in sort of two parts. One is that we now have Admiral nurses on the island. And that's in no small part thanks to both the hospice and Sally Lady Grills in doing some Lady amazing fundraising.
She's coming to the show.
Oh, great. Yeah. Well, that's good. One thing I wanted to ask you about was, you know, the difference that Admiral nurses here on the island can make, because listening to your show, there was a really touching story, because I think, was it Jasmine?
Jasmine
Stan. Who was an Admiral nurse, found out that your mother used to like waltzing.
That's right.
And she actually got her up and started waltzing with her.
It was lovely. Mum, as I said, didn't speak for the last 18 months of her life. So yeah. Jasmine at first struggled to find something to connect with Mum. So be it photos or, you know, reading a book or something.
Yeah.
Nothing was really working. And she said, what did your mum love? And I said, well, she liked to waltz. So Jasmine... I said, Mum, come on, we'll show Jasmine. Would you like to dance with me? And my mum didn't need to speak. She just gave me the look, you know, as if to say, you must be kidding. You've got no sense of rhythm.
Yeah.
So that was that. And then Jasmine said, Joan, my mum was also called Joan, Joan, would you like to dance with me? And my mum's face just lit up.
Aww.
And she got up from her chair, this little frail 90-year-old lady, and they just danced like nobody was watching them.
Oh, that is so sweet, isn't it?
Yeah, it was just
but
adorable.
It is amazing with dementia patients what can... sort of trigger memories or sort of take them back. I know, for example, at the Carisbrook Castle in the museum that they've got there, they actually create baskets full of things that people would remember from their youth, and it does make a big difference. But I think with you, Joan, as well, the Admiral nurses were helping you as much as your mother.
Yes, because Jasmine couldn't really, you know, Mum wouldn't really interact. She'd smile at her, but there wasn't a lot she could do for Mum and with Mum. So her role then was more supporting me to deal with what I was dealing with Mum.
Yes.
So that hopelessness, that not knowing every time I rang on the bell of the home how Mum was going to be, what I was going to find, what the deterioration was going to be, and how that would make me feel. You know, some days I could only stay a few minutes because it made me feel so low and so helpless, and other days I'd stay for an hour. But I would be, I knew Jasmine was there, and I could always pull on her, talk to her, and she would always listen.
Yeah.
And she said, you know, love her, she said, I can't do enough, you know, that I'm not doing enough for you. And I said, you're doing more than you'll ever know, because you're listening and I can offload. And that's part of this whole thing, is having somebody who understands that you can talk to.
And I think for people as well who have to look after a dementia patient, Admiral nurses can provide some respite care as
Absolutely,
well.
Absolutely, yes. And and I think, you know, perhaps they can engage with some of the dementia patients too, through photos, through books, as I was saying, or music, whatever it is, puzzles. There's lots of different things they can do. But Mum was very non... At the point Jasmine came into our lives, Mum was very non-responsive.
Yeah. And in your mum's sort of final days, I think she actually went to the hospice, didn't she? And you said she was treated incredibly well there.
Yes, we were there over Christmas and New Year. So obviously that was very, very difficult, being somewhere at Christmas with Mum and knowing it was going to be her last Christmas. But there were still magical moments, which sounds ridiculous, but because the place is so calm and so professional and so loving... We had the space to just be how we needed to be with Mum, which was very, very important. And things could happen there, like these little miracles. They brought a horse in, a little pony.
What, a whole pony?
A whole pony into the hospice.
Oh, that's so
and
sweet.
I've got a photo of Mum stroking this thing. And Mum's face is like, well, what's it doing in here?
Yeah, exactly.
And it's just, but it's lovely. And there was a harpist, and they took Mum, they wheeled Mum down into the atrium to see the harpist. And they said my mother's face just lit up, which was wonderful.
Yeah.
And my little grandson Archie was there over Christmas, and I brought in a sort of very tacky little pink tree for Mum.
Yeah.
She would have just been horrified, because she always liked a big real one.
Yeah.
But and I put a little angel on the top, and Archie was in my arms. He was 18 months old at the time, and he took the angel off the tree, struggled out of my arms, walked to Mum, placed the angel in her hand, closed her fingers around the angel, and looked at her while he held her other hand. And they just had this beautiful moment, which had she been somewhere a bit more hurly-burly, would never have happened. It just couldn't have happened. Whereas here we had peace, we had calm, and they knew all the signs, so they were able to alert us very early on the day Mum died to enable all of us, the whole family, to be with her and hold her hand.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Oh, good. Well, that's... That's you know, a sad story, but also one that's sort of very hopeful, I think, for people who,
you know, do have life-threatening illnesses or problems here on the island, yes. because there is a wonderful place to go for yes. one's final days.
Absolutely.
And we'll talk in a few minutes' time about ways in which you can support the hospice, one of which is obviously coming to the show that you're marvellously putting on Thursday the 19th of April. So stick with us, and we'll be back in just a few moments.
The Earl Mountbatten Hospice Show with James and Judith. Community radio at its best.
Radio with the community at heart. This is Vectis Radio, FM 104.6.
Yeah, Hackers Can't Get Bumbleo. It's a great tune, and we've got two great people in the studio with us, Donna Jones MPE and Joan Ellis, and they are putting on a treat of a show next week at the Earl Mountbatten Hospice, with all funds going to the Earl Mountbatten Hospice. And what's even better is there's going to be wine and canapés at half time to get you, well, dancing a bit like you would to Bambaleo. Donna, please tell us.
Are you a football fan? Because this thing about half-time, it's always to do with football, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. It so just shows how uncultured
the,
I am.
You know, very culture word would be. Well, I'm not cultured,
at the
am
end
I?
Of Act 1.
Yes, Joni, what's the alternative to half-time?
Interval.
The interval. Yeah. There we go. We're now very cultured, aren't we?
Well, it sounds like it's going to be a posh show if there's going to be an interval. Now, tell us.
What, we are.
It's shock-packed. With goodies, isn't it?
It is, because we're there. Yeah, Joan and I are there. You know, we'll perform to each other. Now, but we know that a lot of people are coming, and our lovely friend Sally Grills is coming, and
she'll
bring, obviously, you know, her super fans with her, because she's an amazing character.
She is.
And I love her, because she's one of these people that when she's got an idea in her head, she does not let go.
I know.
And she can persuade anybody to do anything. So she'll be persuading people to come to our show. What they will expect, though, may be slightly different, because Joan and I do lots of comedy based on our childhoods and our growing up with our families.
Yeah.
And we do poetry. And, you know, I actually dance, believe it or not, at the beginning. I'm not going to say what I dance to, but it's classic. And
it's not Bambaleo.
People will be in awe. They want me to teach them the dance steps afterwards. So there we go.
I'm looking forward to this. I must say, for people at home who are hearing you for the first time, and I can't believe they are hearing you for the first time, little bit of history, because Joan was in advertising, but you also had your own comedy club, didn't you?
Yes, and I was also a single mum at the time. Hey, what was I doing? Wow. I mean, my goodness me. Full-time job, come in the evening and bring me up baby.
And you taught Noel Fielding advertising,
yes,
didn't you?
Yes, that's why I became a comedian.
And Donna, you escaped from the north, or you rather sort of
I relocated
To the Isle of Wight, and that was what, about 8 years ago?
Yeah, I was running the debt collectors. I was running away from them. We used to call them septic knuckles, you know, when they keep banging on your door for money, and they ended up with sort of septic knuckles. So
you must have had a very, very rough door.
Well, anyway, they went through once. My mum once put it through that door, because really? She wanted spending money like my dad. You know, my dad got spending money, and at that time the women didn't know how much their husbands earned. They were given housekeeping.
Right.
Which wasn't spending money. And so this particular day, she went on one, as we would say, and she decided she wanted £5 spending money.
Blimey.
And eventually what happened is father was ignoring her, watching the football, and she went outside and he locked the door on her. Big mistake.
Yeah.
And they were building some new houses round the corner, and she found the biggest house brick she could, came back and put it through the back door.
Yeah.
She got her spending money.
Yeah, quite right. Oh, well, I'd never locked the door on Judith, I have to say, because it would be more than a brick.
But
you look as if you've got something rather dangerous, though, in your hand there. Is that what?
Well, it's
that
for you? It's a present. It's actually an appetizer bottle, but I wouldn't suggest that you try and drink it.
No,
because inside there is one of my handwritten poems.
Oh, lovely!
I can't remember which one, because I do lots, and I'm giving it to you to bury somewhere world.
Okay.
So it could be on the island, or it could be when you go to Portugal, because I hear that you're going on holiday to Portugal very soon.
Yeah.
And it's got my details on it, but the idea for me goes back to all the destruction that's been happening with antiquities in Syria and wherever else in the world that things get destroyed. And as we know, human life is more important. However, having said that, you know, we're going to lose the most beautiful pieces of art ever, and we can't replace them. So this is my contribution to get people to think about that.
Oh, fantastic. So there's a poem in there.
There is a poem, and the top is sealed, so please don't try and open it, because that will, you know, spoil it, really, won't it? Otherwise, the dirt and water will get into it.
Okay, well...
And I'm going to now officially hand it over.
Thank you very much.
You are the owner of a Donna Jones
poem. You see, this is fascinating. So I'm not allowed to read the poem. This must be a world first on radio, being given a poem that only one person knows, and I can't read. Well, there you go.
We say one person knows. I don't know which poem it is because there's 60 gone out.
Right. Okay.
To people on the island.
Well, I will find a very, very special place. You said to me earlier that if I took this poem, I'm not allowed to throw it in the Solent. Is that
no,
right?
No, because obviously we don't want the kind of stuff building up in the Solent, in terms of rubbish and things like that. So I know that they wouldn't be particularly happy for us to do that.
Okay. Well, I promise I'll bury it somewhere safe. And does it have an email address on it? I expect it'll be like that Smash advert in 100 years' time with these aliens going...
for Smash.
What is an email address?
Amazing advert, absolutely. I hope it gets found, as I say, but, you know, it's like treasure then. How exciting is that? And I've done it with little children, and every day they'll ask their mum, has it been found yet? Has it been found yet?
Wow.
They want to take it home, don't they? But there we go.
Well, shall we listen to a little bit of John and Yoko?
Oh, lovely.
I think that'll take us all back to the 60s, apart from these two on my right-hand side, who...
Well, they weren't even twinkles.
They were...
in their parents' eyes, as they say.
I think you'd have to beam them 30 years into the future to just be a twinkle. But there we go. That was the Beatles. Oh, it's a good job that you're not Alexa and listening to what we've been talking about off air, because we've been trying to get a little bit of colour on what Joan and Donna are going to be talking about. And if they're going to be talking about those things, then I think you've got to get there, because it's
going to be bright red.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be unrepeatable, but repeated. Now, just a quick reminder, this show is going to be 7 o'clock, Thursday the 19th of April, which is next week. It's only £10 per person, which is absolutely fantastic value. Do people just turn up on the night, or to
turn up, pay on the door?
Pay on the door,
and
that's
for
fantastic.
For £10, they get wine, canapes. Donna and I, they can take us home if they want to.
Yeah.
You know, that's always an option. I like to keep myself free, just in case.
Okay, well, in a second, I'm going to talk about the kind of comedy that you're going to put into the show. But first, the canapes.
Back to the canapes.
Do you mean the canapes?
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, they're fantastic.
They are.
Hospice.
They've got a reputation that goes before them.
But
they're the headliners.
Canapes are one of my favourite things. And I remember we had some friends round, and they brought their son. And he got very, very confused, because I said, shall I get the wine and some canapes? And he thought I said cannabis. And he was looking at me like, you know, this sort of middle-aged man, you know, he's obviously a bit of a hippie, and he was sort of half excited at the thought he was going to be able to smoke dope in front of his parents, and then sort of half horrified that a man of my age should mention cannabis. Oh. But unfortunately, he just got a bit of pate on a stick.
How did that go down?
That would be pate, where I'm from. You know, canapes and pate. Because how it's spelt is how you say it. So.
Now, Joan, you ran a comedy club, as we said earlier. Mm. What makes great comedy? Is it all about timing, or is it all about sort of situational comedy?
I think it's different for everyone, isn't it? Because there's lots of well-known comics and comedians that I can't abide. And I'm sure that goes... It's so subjective, isn't it? That's the thing. But for me, it's real life. It's humour. It's anecdotes. It's things that happen to people. Like the story you've just told. I mean, that's just intrinsically funny, isn't it?
Yeah.
And the more you try and analyse things, the less funny they become. But, I mean, Donna...
Why am I brilliant?
Why are you brilliant?
Just focus on me a moment.
Back to you. She makes me laugh because, it's awful, because I'm sitting on the side of the stage and I think I should be professional and just kind of be calm and sit there with a sort of nothingy face. But no, I'm sitting there sort of cracking up because she's doing some ridiculous thing and she's come on wearing a helmet. I mean, it's worth coming just to see Donna in a helmet, to be quite honest with you. But no, she's a very funny woman. But she's also a brilliant writer, and her poetry is sensational. And I'm not just saying that because she's sat here next to me. but because I think she's astounding, and that's the reason we sort of hooked up as a double act, because I was always in awe of her talent.
Well, Donna, you've written three books of poetry, haven't you?
I have.
And what kind of poetry is it? Is it amusing poetry? Is it
It's a combination
poignant?
Of everything, to be honest with you, because when I was 11 is when I started writing poetry.
Yeah.
And that's because I got a very inspirational teacher at school.
Yeah.
And also, I couldn't write a diary at home because it wasn't safe, because Mum would read it.
Yeah.
But also, it was my way of dealing with some of the problems at home with my mum's mental health.
Yeah.
And at school, we didn't have your mentors or your counsellors or whatever.
Yeah.
So I had to find my own way of working through things. And poetry was my tool, to be honest with you. But obviously, in the life that I led, in the estate that I lived on, it was funny. It was a survival mechanism, humour.
Yes.
In situations of distress and, you know, breakdowns and all the rest of it was often there.
Yeah.
And I'd sit round, I'd hide in the kitchen and become invisible and listen to my mum and a group of her friends talking about life in a very serious way, about how fed up they were and their marriages weren't right and they got no money and they were in debt. And da-da. But then suddenly it'd all lighten up and they'd all be in hysterics.
Mm.
And it was their way of coping with that kind of life, you know. And moving into work with teenagers onto different estates in Sheffield, I saw it there as well.
Yes.
And I was just saying, one of the houses that I went into, one of the families that I used to work with, I worked with the daughter who was about 14 at the time, and it'd be like World War III. You thought they all hated each other. And what would happen is then one of the mums that said to me, you know over there, and I go, yeah, she said, she ought to have been drowned at birth.
Oh no.
I was shocked,
yeah.
You know, but actually they all cracked up laughing. Because it was their way of coping with situations.
Yeah.
And then she'd say, you know him? Him is a throwback with the swear words in between.
Yeah.
And so I learnt very quickly that their humour, and it was real, a lot of what I mean, both what we talk about on our shows is based on reality.
Yeah.
And it's absolutely hysterical. You couldn't make it up,
now,
some of the stories that we tell.
What I always fear in terms of sort of getting on stage is not making people laugh. Because I used to DJ, and one of the terrible things that I did at one stage, which is probably the worst thing I did in my life. Well, I did worse things, but this was so embarrassing at the time, was to put the wrong tracks on, you know, for the audience, and actually to find I had no tracks in my bag that would ever satisfy them, so I was just sort of stuck there with a dissatisfied audience. Do you sometimes get into a situation where, you know, you're just not sort of working the audience, or it's the wrong audience, you've got the wrong material?
I think the wonderful thing about working with Donna, because there's two of us, I always think, well, if they don't like me, they're going to love her.
Uh-huh.
And they do love her. So I've always got my fallback position. They just adore her. So, that's great.
We've got that chemistry, though, between us. That's the key thing for me.
Yeah.
Is that both of us trust each other.
Yeah.
Okay. So we have I drive Joni mad because, you know, she gives me this, we have this framework that I'm supposed to stick to. And you know, I struggle to stick to it.
You're getting a lot better.
I'm getting a lot better because what happens is she'll get up when it's time for me to shut up, you know, rather than get the cane and pull me off the stage. But because we trust each other so much, there's that kind of fluidity there.
Yeah.
And if something happens, I can respond or Joni can respond. And one of the things that we were talking about is never underestimate an audience. You look at an audience and you think, oh, they're going to be such hard work. You know, they're the crocheting club or wherever. And actually, they're raucous. You know, testing the water all the time. And so we both have a bag of tricks that we think, right, with that audience we can push it a little bit further,
exactly.
You know, and be a bit more rude in a sense, and if they laugh at the first one, we've got them.
Yeah,
it's about recognition, isn't it? It's about what you say they can recognize,
and believe in.
Yes.
Fabulous. Well, you're going to get a load of laughs with these two. Please do go along, because it's in just over a week's time, 7 o'clock, Thursday the 19th of April, Joan and Donna are going to be causing you to split your sides open.
Madness.
They're going
and
to
mayhem.
Tickle your ribs.
And I'm also doing a bit of Marilyn Monroe.
So, my goodness,
that's,
really?
That's quite dark. So the show is always described as funny yet poignant, isn't it? So it's got its darker moments, but that's life, isn't it? The light and shade of life.
Absolutely. And you're raising money for a great cause, just £10 for a ticket.
£10, and it all goes to the hospice.
Fantastic. Well, thank you very much for joining
us
today.
Thank you for having us. It's been lovely.
And have a wonderful, wonderful show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The Earl Mountbatten Hospice Show with James and Judith. Community radio at its best. I make my own sunshine.
Community, your local station. We are your Vectis Radio. FM 104.6 and online at vectisradio.com.